shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra. Daytime turns me off and I don't need maybe.
9 to 5 ain't taking me where I'm bound. Happy New Year from the Allstate Showcase Studio. It's great to be back here in the friendly confines of the Allstate Showcase Studio. We've got a really good show for you tonight. We're going to do a little tribute to a Steve Earle concert out at Fitzgerald's next Saturday night. And we're going to go to Portland, Oregon in our Bluebird van. And our first guest is on the phone from Berger, Missouri, Mary Wilding, whose father I learned about when I was at the College of the Ozarks in the museum. There, are you there, Mary?
I am. I'm here.
Okay. And joining us to help ask questions is bird expert, dear friend of mine, Rock on Tour Deluxe, Mr. Tony Fitzpatrick, who's done his own books on birds and artwork on birds. So I brought Tony in to ask some questions also through the eyes of an artist. But before we start on that, Mary, tell us about your father, who was known as the Birdman of Berger, and the work he did.
Okay, sure. Actually, it's Berger.
Okay.
It's not Berger, even though that is the French pronunciation. It's called Berger. And he started carving in the mid-50s and carved his whole life after that until he died in 1989. And, in fact, he couldn't complete all his orders when he died at age 79. He still had orders that he was completing.
And Tony and I were talking before we went on the air. He carved and he painted. Tell us about his process, I guess. Tell us about the material that he used and how he put these birds together and how many species he did.
Okay. He carved white pine wood almost exclusively. And it was old aged white pine out of old buildings. If he had something that was wider than the maybe 2 inches or 4 inches that he had, he would glue them together. And he carved the smaller detail stuff, but the basic roughing out he did with a he cut it out with a bandsaw, and then he used a sander. A disc sander to sand it. And then he mounted them on pieces of driftwood or little pieces of wood. And painted them.
How many did he do in his lifetime, would you guess?
I would say thousands.
Thousands.
Thousands. And, I mean, I don't know that it would be 10,000, but thousands. And I didn't mention this in the book, and I should have, but he also did some animals. He didn't do a whole lot, as nearly as many animals, but he carved squirrels, and I have a deer head that he did using real antlers, and he carved the deer head and attached the antlers to it. And rabbits and chipmunks, but his birds were the most well known. And he did miniatures, and he did very large ones, like a life size great blue heron, for instance.
Wow! I saw, we've been working on this little documentary on Springfield music and the culture around Springfield, Missouri, and I was doing some research on the Beverly Hillbillies truck, which is down there at the College of the Ozarks, and there in the one room was your dad's collection. How many pieces are in there, and how did they get there?
Oh, okay. I would say maybe 25 to 30 pieces. There was a collector his name was Proctor Carter, and he was from, I think, Hollister, Missouri, and he collected his birds, And then at some point, he donated them to the School of the Ozarks, to that Ralph...
Ralph Foster.
Right, yeah, to the Ralph Foster Museum.
Are they permanent and there? Is that a permanent collection?
Yes, it is. And within the last couple of years, I donated three additional birds to that collection. A wingspread bald eagle that it was maybe a third size, I would say. It was not life size. And a couple of, and a sandpiper and a killdeer.
Now, for Tony, a connective thread, you guys are kindred spirits, but Tony was just in Audubon Magazine, and your dad started advertising his birds in the mid-1950s in Audubon. So why don't you both talk about the Audubon Magazine connections?
First of all, I just got a Clem Wilding bird carving. I was fortunate enough to find one on sale online, a goldfinch. And it came today in the mail, and it is just a revelation. It's one of the most gorgeous things I've ever seen. And your dad absolutely knew that that birds are eternal, and they're talismans of hope, and one of the good things about being in the world. So I'm a big fan of your father's.
Thank you very much.
And I just discovered his work because Dave brought me the book, and what struck me was that the book is very much a record of his day-to-day life, and every day he seemed to fit art making into his life.
That's correct. Yes, one chap, actually, a lot of the book he wrote.
Uh-huh.
He had a couple of journals, one as when he was very young, and one when he met my mother, and then they kept journals much of their lives. My parents did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took one of those journals, 1986, and I just put it as they wrote it, as they kept track. And when I say they wrote it, my mother would tell him what to write, and he would write.
I know how that goes.
Sure. And I mean, you know, if there was any differences, of course they would. I put that in there because I wanted you to understand just how simple their life really was, and uh-huh. and how they lived, and how big a part the birds were in their lives.
Yeah.
And you know, and another. They visited a lot with relatives. They also had, besides this farm where I now live on, in the kind of in the hills away from the Missouri River. But when I say away from, it's within a couple of miles of the Missouri River. They also had a farm that they lived on before they moved to this farm. And it was right on the Missouri River. So they would go down there and they'd collect driftwood and rocks out of the river.
Yeah, it seems that he was very connected to the birds that surrounded him in his native Missouri. Found the wonder and really, you know, the commonplace backyard birds and the herons and the sandpipers. I mean, birds that are right on the Mississippi.
Missouri,
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
You know,
on the other hand, I have a African crowned crane, which is pictured in the book, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
And I know that was not native, but someone asked him to make it, and he had bird books. He had an Audubon bird book. He had Roger Torrey Peterson's book.
Yeah.
And he also got magazines. And from that, he could carve something like that that he never saw.
That's wonderful,
Mary.
I have stacks of bird books, so I know for what he speaks.
Mary, I haven't gotten my book yet. That's the Wicker Park Post Office, Mary. It's not your fault. But I did take some notes before I handed it off, and I picked this one out because it's almost 30 years ago. January 7th. This is his diary. I want Tony to hear this. January 7th, 1986. Worked on birds. He painted three cardinals, two bluebirds, and made five morning glory flowers. What kind of output is that for
that's
a day,
pretty
Tony?
Phenomenal. You know, it takes me about a week to 10 days to finish a bird. This guy was a pro.
Yeah, I always say he was kind of like a workaholic when it came to carving birds, and he would cut out maybe 10 or 15 or maybe 20 on the saw, and then he'd sand a whole bunch of them, and then he'd paint a bunch of them. Once he had his paints out, he would paint them. The morning glories were for hummingbirds.
Yeah.
He would mount the hummingbirds with morning glories.
How long did it take for him to do? I mean, I guess each one varied in time, but what was an average time for him to make a bird?
Well, like I said, he didn't just start with one and finish it, so it's hard to say.
He'd work on multiple pieces at the same time, right?
Yes, exactly.
Did he work on the farm? What did he do when he wasn't making birds?
He had cows, and they had chickens, which were really my mother's pets. But he didn't do any crops. The land that was tillable was somebody else came and did that. But he was a full-time carver.
Full-time. His grandfather was a shoe carver?
Yes. He was a shoe carver from Germany, and his dad was a contractor. He did houses and built a church and stuff like that. And his dad also had a lot of fruit trees. He had an orchard.
That'll bring the birds in.
Yep. Yeah. It will.
Now, I read in your book collectors would come, not unlike what you do at your studio, Tony. Collectors would come, and mother would come out and serve lunch, like a light lunch to the collectors and stuff. So that, would they make conversation with the people that were collecting the birds and stuff?
Oh, yeah. They got to really know the people that came and collected. But for the most part, people were away, and so they did not come, but... Yep, there were people from Missouri and Illinois that did come and look over what he had on hand and pick out maybe one, maybe two, maybe a half a dozen. And
lifetime, what did he charge for his birds, just out of curiosity?
Oh, when at the very first in the 50s when he started, and advertised in Audubon magazine, and he made five little songbirds and sold them for $10, including postage.
Oh, my God.
I know. And he was determined. He was going to get these going and sold. And so, of course, with doing something like that, he had to make a number of them. And in a hurry, but then it wasn't very long that he went up to four for $10, and then he started selling them each a piece. But I still have a few birds with prices on them, and like a bobolink, which, as you know,
really?
Is not a real large bird, might have $40 on it. So they, even while he was still alive, they went up in value.
They're so exquisite. They're such wonderful works of art.
We have to take a break here, and then want to come back, Mary, and we'll talk a little about the book. Because I've been talking to you on and off for the last few years, but then the book developed. That was like 2015. So you want to talk about that when we get back?
Of course.
Okay. Don't go away on WGN's Nocturnal Journal. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. That's our friend Pat McLaughlin. And in studio, we got our friend Tony Fitzpatrick and on the phone, Mary Wilding. Thanks for joining us, Mary, on a Saturday night.
You're welcome.
How do you pronounce the name of your hometown there?
Berger.
Berger. And what's going on in Berger on a Saturday
night? Is it cold there in Berger? It's cold here.
Yes, it's very cold. There is absolutely nothing going on in Berger. Now, when my parents were alive, there was still a grocery store and a bank and a tavern. But now there is a post office that is half-time and a couple of churches, and that's it.
How big is the population there?
It's like 208.
And
they can't keep a bar open, Mary?
Not here, no.
I've said I wanted to come and see you, and I do go to Springfield. How far are you from Springfield, Missouri?
3 hours.
3 hours, okay.
I'm about an hour and 15 minutes from St. Louis.
Oh, you're close. Okay. Now, what gave you the idea to do the book? You said you had the diaries, and tell us about the book, and be sure to tell us how people can find the book.
Okay. I had a lot of admiration for both of my parents, but my father was such an inspiration because he only had an eighth grade education, and he had a dream, and he followed that dream, and he always had self-confidence, and people loved him, and people like you admired his art and bought and like often happens, though, locally he didn't have as many followers as were far away.
That happens a lot, Mary.
Just like me.
Yeah. That's right. But that didn't bother him at all. It just, you know, it didn't faze him. And so he's always been a real role model for me. And I just I wanted to write about him. And so as I collected stuff together, I would put it on like Facebook and stuff like that, different parts of it. And I decided, no, I really need to put this all in a book because, for one thing, both of my parents were from families of 10 children. I have one brother, John, who lives in Herman, and he has a craft shop. But his main thing is he likes blacksmithing. Mm-hmm. And, that's one of his main things that he's interested in. So I decided I was going to write a book. This wasn't really what I had envisioned. I wanted a book mostly with pictures and just a little bit of words. But when I talked to a publisher, this is what they talked me into, and that was fine.
And how can people find the book?
Okay. You can email me for it because I'm not really still in with the publisher. I can get books. Okay. My email is marywilding@aol.com. marywilding@aol.com.
And how much is
paperback,
it?
Paperbacks are $20. Hard copies are $30. If media mail is okay, $2 shipping on paperback, $3 on hard copies. Otherwise, when you email me, and then I'll give you my address or payment types, I'll give you a price on some other shipping.
Very good. I mean, when you do the triple play, when you see the artwork, and then you read your book, and then you just look at when I brought it over to Tony this week, you look at the picture of your father.
Went nuts.
It's just the whole package. It makes you really want to know more about this gentleman.
Mary, did you ever ask your dad why birds?
Oh, you know what? We would drive down the road, and I mean, we are 0.7 miles off the highway. We might stop 2 or 3 times on that private road watching a bird.
Yeah.
I mean, he was fascinated with birds.
Yeah. They connect you to the eternal, and they give you hope.
That's right. That's exactly correct.
What was your introduction? I may have asked you this before, but what was your introduction into birds, Tony?
My grandmother came to stay with us after my dad had a heart attack. And I'm one of 8 kids, Mary. So, So my mother and my grandmother needed like a whip and a chair, you know, and Every morning she would toast a couple pieces of bread and throw them out in the backyard. And, you know, I was from a big family, so we never wasted food. So I was really curious about this. And I said, why are you giving all our bread to the birds? And my grandmother just, you know, put her finger to her lips and, you know, telling me to kind of shush and open the window a little. And she goes, just listen, you know. And I heard it. I heard, you know, 10 or 15 different musics. And she said, for a piece of bread, you can hear God sing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That stayed with me. From that Xeroxed itself to my brain and my heart.
Well, we've got just a minute or two left, but I really encourage people to seek out this work and seek out this book. I mean, it really, really touched me when I saw your father's work several years ago in the museum, Mary.
Thank you.
Kind of a loaded question, but do you have a favorite piece of work or a piece of work of his?
Yes, I do. I have Wisdom. Wisdom is a great horned owl. And he made it when I was in grade school at some point. I'm not sure. But anyway, I would dust him all the time. And when I went off to college at Mizzou, I just picked up Wisdom and I said, I'm taking Wisdom with me. And nobody stopped me. And this is a life-size doll. I mean, it's like 16, 18 inches tall. And he's sitting right up here right now. And he's mounted on a real nice piece of wood. And at Christmas time, I have a little tiny nativity scene that I put underneath him. And
Mary, is it life size?
Yes, it is.
You better be careful. He might eat Joseph, Mary, and baby Jesus.
Okay, we got a break for the news here. Mary, give us the title of the book again.
Clem Wilding's Life as a Bird Carver.
Okay. And thank you, Mary Wilding. Thanks for joining us on Nocturnal Journal. Tony, you're going to hang around. We're going to talk a little bit longer. Okay.
Mary, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll keep in touch with you. I'll let you know when my book shows up, Mary, okay?
Excellent.
Okay. All right. Thanks. We're going to take a break here for
the news.
You got
to take me down there in the Bluebird, which I haven't been in yet.
We'll do that.
I designed it. You got to take me down there.
Yeah, that's a good road trip.
I'd love to meet her.
Okay, we'll do that. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, we're back with David Jennings and News. We'll be back in a minute.
To live my life, this way is too much to bear. Can't find my blue bear anywhere.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We've asked Tony Fitzpatrick to hang around a little bit. You know, contrary to what you might think, we've done radio before.
Yeah, exactly.
Years ago.
Yeah, I know.
Tell me what you were saying about the warm-up exercise. That was hilarious. I've never heard
that before. Oh, when I worked at The Loop, you know, some of the Jays would, you know, have this little jar of, like, chloroseptic, and they do, you know, like, vocal exercise before they went on the air. Yeah. And they'd spray their cans. They'd go, unique New York, unique New York. You know, I mean, it was like... I don't want to mention any names. Some of these guys are still working this market, you know.
I got to remember that.
And I don't mean to make fun of them, but they were pros, you know. I was never a pro. I never went to
the neither am I.
Yeah.
We
are.
It's good to remember.
Yeah.
Unique New York. That is hard to say.
Unique New York.
Yeah.
Unique New York. I mean, but then they give a little spray of chloroseptic, and then they practice giving the time two ways.
Yeah.
9:55, 5 before 10.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 55 degrees, double nickels out there. You know,
they'd
have that broadcast voice, you know, and I thought, you know, who sounds like
Well, you're
that?
Good for radio because you see, you've got you project all this energy.
I'm kind
of a nighttime guy, I'm kind of slow.
I remember the first time you and I did radio together, I wanted to take your pulse. It's like, Dave, wake up.
I am.
We're on the air, you know?
That's perfect for this shift. So, now, tell me about this St. Alfred line. I know it's sold out, but this meant a lot to me. Thank you for bringing the shirt.
You're welcome. You know what? We're about to lose the double door in Wicker Park, which I saw the greatest live rock and roll show of my life there. I saw Chris Whitley in 1997. And, man, it was just one of those transcendent shows where you see this guy who obviously had a conduit to something otherworldly. I mean, it was just mesmerizing. And it wouldn't have been the same anywhere else. You know, Kansas City has the Emporium. You know, Berwyn has Fitzgerald's. I thought the double door was incredibly special.
So you did a line of these clothes. What is St. Alfred's?
St. Alfred's is a kind of a streetwear line, and they have a store in Wicker Park that my son started going to, and he started getting some really cool hats and shoes and T-shirts and hoodies and stuff. And I started going in there, and, you know, some of the hats I could wear. And I really began to like the look of the place. And I became friends with Frank DiGiovanni and Joe Schaefer, the guys who run St. Alfred's. And about a year ago, we decided to see if any of what I did would work as, you know, clothing, as street gear. And we made a hoodie and a couple of T-shirts and a work shirt. That one is an homage to the double door. And we made them in an edition. We made a limited edition of them. You know, I think it's...
Now, they all don't say... Do they all say Tony?
Yeah.
Can I get in trouble?
Yeah, yeah. They all say Tony.
Okay.
I had a guy go, well, can you put Richard? And it's like, no. No, okay. we won't, you know. But I wanted this stuff to look like, you know, not precious or so much... I wanted to fit in with the culture that I'm from, and I wanted to take into account, you know, Chicago history, this place, you know, and celebrate it. So the work shirt was kind of a way of honoring the double door.
And you say
the proceeds go to Young Chicago Authors.
Oh, that's good.
And the proceeds for the other things go to the Chicago Ornithological Society for the Restoring Labaugh Woods. And, you know, I just thought this would be a really great kind of shoestring philanthropy, you know, and a way to, you know, be part of your community, be supportive. And I've had fun doing it.
And you are going to do it, even though this line is sold out.
This line's sold out. We're designing a new line for the spring and the summer.
Okay.
And maybe a shoe, you know.
Oh,
so, yeah, which I'm excited about.
Now, in line with the bird thing, how are our books doing with curbside? You did Secret Birds with curbside.
Yeah,
I did Disco Demolition.
Yeah.
I think we're doing fine.
We're doing okay. You know?
So we're going to take we never do this much on Nocturnal Journal, but for the third caller, right?
I'm hoping there's three people listening.
We're hoping that.
I know my wife and my daughter are in
the green room,
exactly.
so we count them.
Somebody in the green room is going to win it, you know?
So 312-981-7200 is going to get an autographed copy of The Secret Birds.
Yeah.
Tell us what's in that, what they're going to get.
It's basically the first volume of... My work about birds, and it's, you know, what I've made over the last few years. You know, I got fascinated with birds in a really in earnest way. I kind of recharged myself being interested in that, recovering from my heart attack, mm-hmm. you know, because I would look out the window and I had a bunch of bird feeders when I was in Ukrainian Village, and, that was kind of my sanity, you know. They kind of connected me to this thing that I can only describe as eternal, you know. And
look at the line; the board's lighting up, Tony.
It reached back into my childhood. And Albert Camus once said that artists inevitably circle back to the one or two images that open their heart.
Yeah,
and I kind of believe that. And the older I get, the more sense that makes.
Well, you know, my mom loved birds. You met my mom.
But yeah,
for
she
some
sure
reason,
did.
When my parents passed, that just kind of heightened my thing for birds.
Yeah,
I pay closer attention to them now. For some reason,
I'm like a complete nerd now. I like watch all the bird shows on TV. I will walk into people's backyards, and you know, if I see a bird I haven't seen before, I mean, I finally noticed that there are like nuthatches in Illinois. I'd only seen them out east, and. I wandered into some poor lady's backyard one day, you know, because there was a nuthatch. I said, well, what are you feeding him? She's like, what am I feeding who? Why are you in my yard? I said,
how old was this woman, Tony?
She was, you know, she was 75,
oh,
80,
okay,
you
right.
know. Yeah, no.
21 or something.
No. It was... You know, and she goes, well, in the bird feeder, there's millet and suet and the sunflower seeds and leaf. Yeah. You know?
So, we got to do that. That was a great idea. We got to go see Mary in the van. I'm wrapping up. My manuscript is due in March, so we should do that trip. Because I'll tell you, we did the wrap with your birds.
Did a Kansas City trip once, too.
But the van I'm driving around, I got to tell you, I've been all over the country. I've done 18,000 miles, and even if I'm at a stoplight, people look and smile at those birds. You know what I mean? And we're living in rough times right now. To get a smile from somebody.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
The way you honor life is with a smile.
We have a winner, Tony. Kathy from Chicago.
All right.
So maybe you can personalize it to her, right?
Sure. Okay. I'll send it to her.
Okay.
All right. Kathy, good on you.
One or two more minutes. We got to take a break. Tell us real quick about Patriot, and then we got a break.
Patriot. I'm acting in a series for Amazon Prime called Patriot, which is about a kind of a deep cover CIA guy, and I play somebody who he kind of encounters. It drops. The pilot is out now. You can watch it on Amazon Prime, and it's marvelous. And it's got really great actors. You know, I mean, I got to work way above my pay grade with the great Terry O'Quinn, the marvelous Kurtwood Smith, who's a first-rate gentleman and great guy, and Michael Dorman, who's initially from New Zealand and now Australian. He's the lead in this, and he's magnificent. And you're going to like this. This is like a dark kind of strange Lovian comedy, but it's funnier than hell,
Well, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Wasn't that great? Wasn't Mary great?
She sure was, her father's work. You know what? My goldfinch, my Clem Wilding goldfinch showed up today.
Yeah.
Because I found it on the internet. I bought it. And it's just a wondrous thing. I collect carvings of birds. I have for 25 years, and this one I just will never part with. It's just astonishing.
Okay, and you're going to come back maybe this spring with Anthony?
Absolutely, Anthony Potenzo.
Okay, we're going to talk.
I would have dragged him in tonight, but he's at Charlottetown, being the front of the house guy.
Yeah, he's been in here, but okay, let's do that again.
We'll bring Frank Catalano with us.
Oh,
too.
That'd be good.
Yeah,
he's been. All right, thanks so much, Tony.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Be back after this break. We're going to go to Portland, Oregon, on Nocturnal Journal.